Welcome to In Plain Legal. I'm DNA High Easton, and today we're making the law something everyone can understand. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to In Plain Legal, where we break down the complexities of law into practical insights that truly matter for your life. I'm your host, DNA High Easton. Today we're diving into one of the most important yet often overlooked areas of legal planning, estate planning. So many of us think, I'll get to it someday, but that delay can leave our loved ones burdened, confused, or even fighting over our legacy. Joining me is attorney Alina Gonzalez-Dockery, founder and principal of Life Law Planning, with nearly three decades of practice in estate planning, probate, and family law. Alina has dedicated her career to empowering families with the tools and clarity they need to prepare wisely. She's also a proud University of Florida alum, go Gators, and earned her Juris Doctor from St. Thomas University School of Law in 1996. Alina, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for that little go Gators.
Oh, you're welcome. I had to do it for you. Before we dive in, let me ask you this. Why do you think so many people procrastinate estate planning, even though they know it's important?
It could be mortality. It's a conversation that most feel that it's just something that, oh, I have time, like you said in your introduction, but also I truly believe it's just that having to discuss your death, the potential of your mortality, tends to stymie people. And it's like we were talking off, I had a friend that passed unexpectedly, and she was a daughter of an attorney who was estate planning. And the question is, does she have her estate planning done? And we're finding out that she didn't. And part of it is some people think it's morbid to start talking about death and what we do. And the reality is it's not a morbid topic. What it really is it's a freeing aspect in that you are making a plan not only for yourself after death, which is what a will is. A will is good when after you pass, but it's also an ability for you to handle your affairs and make sure that you have the right people put into place that can take ownership over your health care decisions if something should happen to you and you become incapacitated, or your financial issues during your lifetime if you become incapacitated. Also, one of the things that really helps alleviate family strife or stress on the family is you can also make your funeral arrangements or your celebration of life arrangements, and you can get those details and the instructions for your family. So all they're doing is focusing on their own emotions, their own well-being, while just executing what you have already planned. So if somebody is a big planner, this is your time to shine. If you want to know how, if you wish to be able to plan how you wish to be remembered. But it also is such a freeing aspect of the stress and the strife that can often happen when you have family members that may have differing of opinions as to when or where your celebration of life should occur.
You know what, that is a very insightful thing that you said, and I want to first start off by saying that I'm sorry for your loss. I mean, us as estate planning attorneys, we know that as much as we help people prepare for it, when it happens to ourselves and in our family circle, it can still have a really big impact. So I'm sorry for your loss. And, you know, as you also stated, like, there's a huge problem with the delay in estate planning that can leave heirs burdened, confused, and in conflict. And so when you're grieving over a loved one, it's really hard to kind of see through the cloud, right, of what do I do, where do I go, how do I help the family that's left behind. So the fact that you, as an estate planning attorney, know that and you're dealing with that, and she, unfortunately, you guys are looking to see if that has happened. I mean, you know firsthand what that looks like and how you can help the family. So kind of along those lines, like, what do you think are the first three documents everyone should put in place, even if they don't own much?
I'll pay right now, even if you're, once your child turns 18, At a minimum, power of attorney, the healthcare advocate surrogate or designation of healthcare surrogate, as well as a living will. And I say that because that's anybody who's over the age of 18 plus, at least those three documents. And the reason being is that as I tend to remind friends of mine whose children go off to college or such, that if something were to happen to your child who is a young adult, without those documents, you will not be able to make those important decisions or handle the finances. How you wish to be cared for and how things are to be conducted in your lifetime if you become incapacitated. Because, I mean, I'm sure as you know, where I practice in Southwest Florida, we do have a high rate of elder fraud. And the banks here look at the power of attorneys and they don't take them on blind faith. Like they want verification from the attorney that drafted it and such. But also if you have a family member say that is has dementia or something, they go into the bank saying, I never had a power of attorney. That person's trying to steal. They can orally revoke that power of attorney, which leaves you no other means but to get a guardianship. So estate planning is crucial because it may have a small expense at, or a medium-sized expense at the beginning. It will save your family a lot of stress, financial burden, and also keeping the court's nose out of your business.
I mean, we definitely like to keep the court's nose out of everyone's business, right? I mean, who wants the court breathing down their neck for anything? But what you said was very valuable and very true, right? Like, especially when our children do turn 18, there's no way that you can make any decisions regarding their care. And a lot of people forget that because they're like, well, I'm the parent. I'm going to be able to do that no matter what, right? And so you touched on something that was really, really good. So how can someone create an estate plan that really works, not just for them, but for the people they love when hard times do come?
Well, I think that's just having an open, honest conversation with the attorney that you're meeting with, that the attorney gets to know you and your family, because ultimately you know best what you want for your family and how to advance them and keep them in a position of stability and love, because that's ultimately the goal of estate planning. With proper estate planning, it's an ease and flow so that those loved ones are. Can really focus in on what they're feeling and allow for the processing of grief and remembrance of the individual rather than being stressed or fighting or and whatnot.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that we're not just creating documents, we're trying to help people get through this really, really hard time in their lives when that time does come. I mean, a lot of people don't want to think about that until it becomes a problem or it's too late, unfortunately. So, what common mistakes or oversights cause conflict between heirs later, do you think, in your professional opinion?
I love it when I get a call and you'll hear, and maybe you've had this. My mother told me the house is supposed to go to me. Why the house is supposed to be mine? Or I've been the caregiver for my parent or my aunt and uncle, and I'm supposed to get the house or something. And there's nothing in writing, and there is no will. Or the will says the opposite. And the bottom line is that we have to go based on either the written document that's been properly executed before two witnesses, or we go based on the intestacy laws, which, states by law who are the natural heirs of a decedent. So I think that's it. I think also a big issue that I find is the overvaluation of assets. So when you have, for instance, a house and the individual always says, oh, this is $1 million property. You can't buy this house for less than $1 million. And then the heirs put the house up for sale and they find that the house isn't even getting a showing at $1 million. And then they end up selling it for substantially less, say 700,000. that can create some animosity or distrust among the heirs, because then they're like, well, wait a minute, did the personal representative or the trustee not do their due diligence when they marketed and sold the house? Another, I would say one of the bigger issues that I am finding is more with the long-term relationships that are not marriages, but they are the, committed domestic partners. Because I'll give you an example. I had a woman that she was in tears. She was mourning her beloved, and they were never married. It was her partner. They were together 28 plus years. He died. He died without a will. She was, throughout their relationship, was a homemaker. She never worked outside of the home. Everything was in his name. And he was estranged from his children.
Oh no, I know where this is
Talked
going.
to them. You know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going.
He had not spoken with his children in over 40 years. And because he died without a will, without her being on the title, without anything, the children came in by law. They are the natural heirs. And she received a letter from an attorney's office, basically evicting her from a home that she made a home for 28 years. So I think there are so many details that people don't realize that. And I feel like, people want to say, well, the traditional family is the husband and wife. They had the one family, never divorced and stuff, but that's not the reality of today. See, spouses are covered, they're protected. If one spouse dies, with the other spouse automatically is deemed the heir. And depending on how titles are done and such, you don't really have an issue. The real issue is when you have someone who is in a committed, non-married relationship. And you want stability, you need to make sure that you have that estate plan. If you have children, say that this is another thing. Say you don't have children, but you have children that you treat as your own, and you want to make sure that they get something, you need to make sure that is in writing.
Absolutely.
Because and you have such a great background with your varying expertise and experiences. As much as we want to believe that our family is going to do exactly what our wishes are on the deathbed, the reality is no, most likely they're not going to follow through. They're just going to do exactly what either is on paper or what the law says.
And I think that's why people put everything, and we have to have it on paper, because if everyone was doing the he said, she said conversation, then everyone would be getting what they want. And then, I mean, that leads to more conflict. And you're right, all of those things that you discuss, it's heartbreaking to hear. And this is why it's so important that we have these discussions, so people know and are educated and understand that this could happen to you, especially because a lot of people are not getting married as often as they used to. But I appreciate all of your insights, and we'll be right back. Coming up, we'll talk about probate and why it often feels like a maze families can't escape. Stay with us. We'll be right back with clear explanations, practical advice, and the legal insights you need without the jargon. This is In Plain Legal on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm DNA High Easton, and you're watching In Plain Legal on Now Media Television. Let's continue breaking down the law together. I'm here with attorney Alina Gonzalez Dockery. In this segment, we're unpacking probate, a process that so many families describe as slow, confusing, and exhausting, especially when they're already grieving. The problem facing many viewers is getting stuck in probate, endless red tape, legal costs, and family tension. What exactly is probate, and why does it seem so slow, confusing, and expensive?
I would say there are, okay, so a probate is an administration of a decedent's estate. So basically, it could be either a formal administration, and that's usually brought within 2 years of someone's passing. And that's to administer the estate means that an individual is named as the executor or the personal representative, either via will or they petition the court to be appointed as such. And they step into the shoes of the decedent so that they can resolve any debts that the estate may still have, also sell any assets that may be necessary, and to distribute the assets to the heirs. So, in a perfect world, decedent passes away. We'll just say there's a will. They name their executor or executress in there, and the executor just does the petition, and everything just goes seamlessly. And let's say within 5 to 6 months, the administration is closed. That is a perfect run, right? And it usually takes about 5 to 6 months for a probate action. And this is a formal administration because you have to deal with creditor claim periods and such. Now, what usually throws in a lot of kinks into the process is, one, if you do have a lot of creditors that are making claim, or there's a dispute within the beneficiaries, or say the personal representative or the executor determines that they need to sell an asset, whether it's the homestead property, the primary residence, or real property, and not everybody's on board with that, then they have to still get authorization from the court to authorize a sale for the closing. And these are the things that can start causing a lag in the process. One of the ways you can avoid the long drawn out probate process is obviously have a trust. And that is an administration of the trust. And you still want to do some formalities with the administration of the trust, but that's outside of the court purview. And the trustee, again, steps into the shoes of the decedent, but they're basically able to do what needs to be done in order for the heirs to receive their distributions accordingly. So I would love to hear some of your battle stories of probate, but yeah, I mean, it really comes down to the fact that in probate, the court has to approve a lot of the steps, whereas in trust, the trustee has the sole right to decide to sell an asset or such.
Right, and I think, as we know, the only thing that's constant that I think I talked to you about this on your show is change, and we're all gonna unfortunately die at some point. So, with the courts being so bogged down with the amount of deaths that they're having to deal with in the county for the probate courts, it even adds that slowness, like, 'cause there's only a couple of courts that we, have to work with. I know here in Montgomery County, Texas, there's one statutory probate court. So it's one court listening to all of the people that have passed away in Montgomery County. So that adds the slow factor, and the fact that makes it expensive is that you have to hire an attorney to help you, right? I mean, a lot of people I know out here in Texas, they just recently changed the law, but for the majority of the time, you have to have an attorney to help you go through that process, and that itself is what makes it expensive. So you talked a little bit about a trust. I kind of want to delve into that a little bit more. You had said that it's a way to avoid and simplify the probate process. So can you kind of explain a little bit more for people who don't even know what a trust is?
A trust is another tool for estate planning. However, what happens is with a trust, and you still have a will accompanying it because it's basically a pour-over will. So what a trust is it's a way, it's a technique, it's a tool to not only distribute and determine how your assets will be distributed and to whom and how, like basically what beneficiaries and how, but also it allows the successor trustee. So when you open up a trust and you have a revocable living trust, you as the individual, you as the couple, are the grantors, the grantees, the trustees, and the beneficiaries. Everything is still under your purview and your control. In the event of incapacity, your successor trustee will step into your shoes and will be able to handle everything on your behalf as if they were you. So, if you're like, say, somebody who has memory care issues like dementia or Alzheimer's, the successor trustee can come in and make sure that the care of that individual is still maintained. And if there's specific instructions within the trust on how to maintain that individual, they will do so accordingly. But then, upon the passing of the decedent, the trustee then will go through, do an inventory of the assets of the trust, determine what is outside of the trust, say if there's an account or a car or something like that, And they will be able to then start distributing the assets after they pay any debts, do the tax returns for the decedent. And
That
then
sounds great.
they can cut, they can sign titles, they can, they can close bank accounts, they can distribute stocks and such, and you don't need the court's permission to do so. If the trustee decides that, let's say you have multiple properties and one property has to be sold in order to settle the debts of the estate, because once somebody dies, doesn't mean the creditors go away.
Right.
You're still to take care of them. So, but you don't have to have court authority to do so. You don't have to go and you have the full purview. You have the full rights to put list a property, sell that property, and then settle whatever needs to be settled. So it is an easier tool. And now, again, there can always be hiccups, as I'm sure you know. I mean, if you have beneficiaries who decide that they want a full accounting and they want to bring a lawsuit against the trustee because they don't feel that the trustee did their due diligence under that, that could always happen. But one of the things regularly is the trustee has a lot of power in the sense that they can administer the trust without having court approval, and
Which
I
is
think that
great.
helps.
It sounds like that's kind of the best strategy to kind of avoid or at least simplify the probate process for the heirs. So
Absolutely. And
let's.
in Florida, like I tell people all the time, we don't have an estate tax here in Florida. We go based on the federal levels. And yes, trust can be used for helping avoid estate taxes. But one of the things is, like, for us doing a probate, you can do a summary administration, try to do the notice creditor, shrink that creditor period from 2 years down to 90 days. And it helps greatly to do that. But once you have a trust, I mean, things can go. I had one probate. I mean, we opened it. 4 months later, we closed it because there was a trust. We only did it for the creditor period. And it
That's
was
good.
fantastic. Yeah. It
That's good.
was one of the smoothest things I've ever had.
Yep, because we know that the process can take a very long time. So to be able to go in and close it in 4 months, that's incredible. So if you're watching viewers, you need to get a trust. Can I help you with the simplification of the probate process? So very briefly, what probate, like once probate starts, what steps do executors face and what traps should they watch out for?
One of the first things is you need to gather all, if you don't already have like a binder or know where the decedent maintains their important paperwork, you need to gather all that because you have to see if there's life insurance policies, if the funeral bill, prepaid funeral expenses, things of that. But also immediately contact a CPA that you trust because you are going to have to do a tax return on behalf of the estate. And then we're going to go for gathering the assets, inventorying the assets so that we can start the distribution process. And I think that is really where a lot of the missteps may occur. It's like you just need to gather all the assets to ensure and then make sure that you have proper information for the heirs, for the contact heirs.
That's
So just be
amazing.
prepared. I won't say it's a marathon necessarily. But the more that you are prepared and the better, let's put it this way, the person who initiates and executes this plan, it's really the first step is the decedent. The better organized the decedent is in providing the documentation, then the executor will be able to handle their duties.
Well, that is very insightful information, and I appreciate you for sharing. So, Alina, for those who want to learn more about navigating probate or avoiding it altogether, where can they connect with you and your firm?
Well, I practice here in Florida, and whether you are a snowbird or a full-timer, you can reach me at lifelawplanning.com. Inquiries, it goes straight to me. My telephone number is 239-789-2533. We are also one of the very few bilingual estate planning and probate attorneys in the Southwest Florida. So nosotros hablamos español, so please give us a call so we can accommodate you and your family as best as possible.
Thank you. Coming up next, we're going to delve deeper into trusts, why they're not just for the wealthy, but a tool that could bring peace of mind to your family. Stay with us. We'll be right back with clear explanations, practical advice, and the legal insights you need without the jargon. This is In Plain Legal on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm DNA High Easton, and you're watching In Plain Legal on Now Media Television. Let's continue breaking down the law together. Welcome back to In Plain Legal. I'm here again with attorney Alina Gonzalez-Dockery. Now, one of the biggest misconceptions people have is that trusts are only for the rich. But the truth is, trusts can help everyday families avoid headaches, protect assets, and bring peace of mind. The problem is that many people think and feel that trusts are too complicated or unnecessary, leaving their estate vulnerable when a trust could have made things simpler. What are the main types of trusts in simple terms, and why would a regular person use them?
Trusts are a great tool. First and foremost, if you are a parent with a minor child or a child under the age of, say, 25, a trust is a great method ensuring that you get to a point who will be in charge of the assets upon your passing. Because believe it or not, just because you're the parent doesn't mean you're the natural guardian of the property.
That is a huge misconception. You need to say that one more time because people don't know that. Say that one more time for me.
A parent is the natural guardian over the person of a minor child, and this is up till their age 18, but they are not the natural guardian over the property. What that means is, let's give a great example of a grandparent, loving grandparent, wants to leave money for little Johnny or Susie, and they leave it as in their will, that my granddaughter will receive $20,000 or $30,000, my grandson will receive $50,000, or I want to leave my property to my grandchildren. And the grandchildren are minors. And what that means is that the parents will now have to hire an attorney to file a guardianship over the property so that they can be appointed as the guardians over the property. What that means is that, at least in Florida, if a minor is receiving over $15,000, whether that means the valuation of the asset, which is like, say, the real property, or a stock or IRA, or they have cash, the parents will now have to pay an attorney to open a guardianship to get them appointed as guardian of property, provide an inventory to the court, and annually do an accounting. So for every dime that you want to spend on your child, you have to account for it. But also, if there's a major expenditure, let's just say, for example, you want to buy the child a car and use the assets grandmother gave or left for that child, you have to ask the court for permission. So again, you're inviting the camel, the court, into your business. And if you're divorced, you know, again, if you're divorced, mom and dad get a divorce, dad passes away, mom is the natural guardian over the children. She can take care of their medical needs and everything. But if there's assets, somebody has to be appointed by the court in order to do that, unless you have a trust. And then you get to name who it is that handles the money and the assets and how it's handled. And also, you can make sure that that you worked hard for, the assets that you have, the property and all that, are there beyond the age of 18. Because here's a big difference. If you leave somebody something as a minor once they turned 18, they receive it outright. So you can have an 18-year-old who's only in his first month of senior year in high school receiving a big check like $50,000, $100,000, whatever. And what happens with an 18-year-old who gets a lot of money?
They spend it.
So it's not there to be put away for university or what have you. So you can actually even put, if you have a trust, you can say, okay, these funds were going to be held, and I'm going to allow a distribution at 25 years old, another one at 30, and say the last one at 35. But I want to make sure that this money and these assets and these investments are there so my grandchild or my child has it for purposes of education, residential care. Yes, they can get residence and say, pay for dorms, pay for apartments, help with putting a down payment to the house. things of that nature, but they also have something kind of like a safety net to ensure the maturity goes along with the assets. I do love trust, because one of the things, especially being in Southwest Florida, we have a very probably still majority of the residents are retirees. And with a trust, you can dictate how your trustee will handle and manage your financial affairs to ensure that you and your spouse, you and or your partner, are taken care of in the manner in which you want to be taken care of. So that could be a certain allowance. I have a couple that they are domestic partners. They are not married. And one of the things that the gentleman wanted to ensure was that if anything should happen to him, that there was a monthly income coming in from his business, regardless if he's working it or not, that would go to ensure that all of the expenses are paid and that his partner is maintained in the level that they are enjoying. I have it even in it, like, I'll use my mother. My dad made sure that it is understood that my mom is to get her hair done every week. That, she's from that generation, that was something that was expected. But he wanted to make sure that whoever steps into his shoes knows that there are certain aspects of care that my mom requires and he wants to maintain if he is not able to be the one to continue to do that. So trusts are a great tool. But if, I always tell parents, if you really want to make sure, especially for those that are no longer living as a family unit, you want to ensure that the money is there with somebody that is trustworthy, that can handle the assets, but also allows for those funds to stretch out to your children going beyond high school.
Which is a beautiful thing. I mean, I love that you are educating your clients just as much as you're helping through, helping them to draft these trusts, because they can be very complicated, but you broke it down in simple terms. And I know here in Texas and also in Massachusetts that no child can even inherit property if they're under the age of 18. So these trusts are such a great tool to kind of help these families not have to go through, like you stated, the whole guardianship process, because the guardianship process is a totally different beast that people do not know how to navigate through, and they don't realize how expensive it is, right? So the value of a trust is so important. So I just want to break down kind of the main types of trusts, if you can kind of explain to the viewers, what is a revocable living trust?
So the revocable living trust is that basically, I'll use myself. If I am the one creating the trust, I put all of my assets, my bank accounts, my real property, I put a title in the trust, stocks, bonds, whatever, all my assets in it. I still have full control over my assets. I can sell them, I can encumber them, which means taking, a loan out against them. I can do what I wish to do with them. But also at any time during my lifetime, I can decide to wake up and, I'm going to revoke that trust, and I'm going to revoke the trust, take the assets out of the name of the trust, and I'm going to do with it what I want, right? And with that's why it's revocable. Now, there's an irrevocable trust. What that means is that regardless of what happens years down the road and you want to change your mind, you cannot revoke it. And it's usually there for asset protection, and you want to make it an irrevocable trust. I'll give a great example. So one way is, say my father wanted to create a trust on for my benefit, and it's an irrevocable trust. So he's not going to be able to revoke it. And as my lifetime, that he decided, you know what, the trust is going to buy a piece of property, a house or a condo for my benefit, right? The trust owns it. It's irrevocable. Nobody can revoke the trust. But also, there's going to be more stiffer actions regarding the assets within it. A lot of times, when you deal with an irrevocable trust, would be like a special needs trust. If you create a special needs trust for somebody who's disabled or has intellectual disabilities, it's an irrevocable trust. But also, then that's a different special type of trust where the beneficiary does not even have access to those funds, that there's always like a control factor. Then you have, there's so many trusts. You have the real
There
estate
are.
trust. You can have a trust for just real estate investments, and that really is a liability shield to allow, like, you have a land trust. You can have a charitable foundation trust. I think one of the best trusts everybody wants to look at is like the Rockefeller Trust, because the Rockefellers are the only major families from back in the Gilded Age that didn't lose all their funds because of the way that they handle their management of that trust, and that each heir basically receives a thing, but then there's also a life insurance policy on that heir for the amount that they are to have, and then the trust upon their passing gets it, the money back. So it's really interesting how we can learn further. But I would definitely say that the most common is the revocable living trust. I think that I know I handle special needs trust, and that can be just ensuring that someone is still eligible for their government benefits, but still has that safety net to allow for extras.
And that is so important because they cannot lose their benefits, right? So that's why it's important to make sure that it is irrevocable with a special needs trust. And you know, I just have to say that I love talking to you because I feel like I have another partner in crime, but in the best way possible, right? Because trusts are so important and they're so special and they can really help families avoid conflict, avoid the probate process, and they can really prepare for their future with their planning, especially people who are unmarried partners, because there's no restriction on who you want to be your beneficiaries within a trust. So I just want to say thank you for sharing all that with us today. Up next, we'll talk about legacy, how to make sure what you leave behind inspires your family instead of burdening them. Stay with us. We'll be right back with clear explanations, practical advice, and the legal insights you need without the jargon. This is In Plain Legal on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm DNA High Easton, and you're watching In Plain Legal on Now Media Television. Let's continue breaking down the law together. For our final segment, we're talking about something bigger than documents or legal processes. We're talking about your legacy. What you leave behind should inspire and uplift your loved ones, not create conflict or confusion. The challenge is that people want to leave something behind, but worry it might become a burden instead of a blessing. Alina, how do you structure a legacy plan so your heirs get what they want? Well, not necessarily your heirs, but your clients' heirs get what they need, not necessarily just what they want.
It's like what we were discussing in our very first segment. It's really getting to know the clients and what their desires are. Because look, you can have people, and you see these commercials on TV, oh, for $350, call this 1-800 number, you get a will, or you can get a trust for $650. I would love to see what that gives you, because it's not a cookie cutter. We're talking about your family. This is your lives, your family is what you have ascertained. And one of the most amazing and biggest gifts that you have is what is your legacy, and it's more than just who gets what. It's not about, oh, little Johnny gets the house and Susie Q gets the beach condo or whatever. And I know I'm using Johnny and Susie a lot, but it's really about what kind of memories do you want to create and foster behind, because your legacy is more than what you have obtained during your lifetime. It's about the morals that you raised your children with, or the benefits and effects that you've had on your friends' children, who may be like your nieces or nephews, or your own nieces and nephew. But really establishing a legacy trust, say that you are somebody who has been blessed with creating and realizing the American dream, and you have a lot of real estate properties, or you really are great with the stock market and have ascertaining, you want to ensure that what you have built will benefit your family, not just from your immediate family of your spouse and your children, but from your grandchildren and for generations to come. And then that's creating a legacy or a lifetime asset protection trust, where everything stays within the trust, nothing gets sold, but the beneficiaries have the benefit of the use of it. in or the income from it, but you always maintain those assets and the trust, and you have a really good asset manager and trustee as that. And that's usually when you have a professional.
So what it sounds like is that you really take the time to get to know your clients and make sure that their wishes are heard and that they're going to help not just benefit themselves during their lifetime, but also their children and maybe their grandchildren and maybe, friends and family that they want to give their assets to.
I'll give you a great example. I have this client. I absolutely adore him. He just got it was a golden marriage, so a widow and a widower decided to get married later in life, and absolutely love those. Okay, and I assisted him in his prenuptial agreement, and they both were very firm that their assets are to go to their families, but they found love in their latter years. And in his trust that we were devising, one of the things that he really felt like what was most important to him is that his children and their children, that they continue to have yearly vacations together. So, and he took that from his mother because his mother had some stocks or something, and she left it for the benefit of the family to continue to have family reunions. And he and his siblings and his children and their cousins are so close because they continue to do these annual family retreats or family reunions, if you will. So the mom did a fantastic job in setting it up that the assets, rather than just distributing it to the kids, it's actually a managed account. And it's a financial account that continues to grow, and they just use the dividends to pay for these trips. So he really thought that was important. So he has like six kids, and he has all these grandchildren. Now he's starting to have great grandchildren. For him, what was most valuable was the continuing bond and strength of the family. So
That
we
is
set up in his
beautiful.
trust a certain amount of monies or percent, and it's a nice sum chunk of his estate that will always be there to be managed professionally so that the assets will continue to be there so generations to come have a yearly family reunion trip.
That's beautiful. So it sounds
Hello.
like they use their financial assets to form a non-financial legacy to be with their family members. And so, would you say that that's something that's very common for you, where you do try to implement some form of value, stories, or lessons to be included in a plan, not just for their documents, but obviously for everything else that comes with it?
Absolutely. I haven't been blessed to do the video because probably that would be really interesting, like the video legacy. But one of the things is to ensure, look, we could try to cookie cutter it. We could say, okay, you do this, right? Or you can really lean in and learn about what is most important about your clients. Now, some clients really are about the assets and ensuring that their kids get the assets and what they do with it is what have you. And I find that the parents or the grandparents, especially if there are children of special needs involved, they want to ensure that their livelihoods or the substantive issues are resolved in that they are comfortable and that they get to benefit. Like I had one family that one of their children is special needs, and they wanted to ensure that that child still goes on a yearly trip. And it's always a cruise, and it's always on the autism epilepsy cruise, right? You should see how he beats, right? And so I think that's really the most the best advice I can provide to your audience is when you're meeting with an attorney, it's not about cookie cutter or straight up, oh, these are your assets, this is how it is. How do you wish to be remembered? How do you wish your family to benefit from everything that you have gone through? So I know if it was up to my father, we would have all lived in a compound, all of our houses right next to each other. But one of the benefits he did is that he has instilled in us a very close bond, but he is ensuring that we continue to have that by making a piece of property that he has at the beach to be a family asset so that the grandchildren can take their kids to the beach where I grew up going. Where, even though maybe we don't get together on 4th of July every year like we used to, we still get together for a reason, but he wanted to instill certain things. Get to know your attorney. Your attorney should get to know you. And like Danny, she has such an amazing background. I mean, your background still impressed me. I still think of you because
Oh,
you
thanks.
then through because you understand the human aspect and what it is, the emotional, because we're not dealing with just papers. We're dealing with the emotional bonds of family and friends, those that don't have family, that they have bonds as well, that they want to preserve. So it's just a matter of getting to know your client.
I agree, and I always encourage, as you I said on your show, I always encourage people to talk to as many of as attorneys as you can, because you want to see who you can connect with, who can really help you form that plan, but also help form the bonds to be there for your children and their friends and their children if something happens to you. So then that way the legacy can continue on. Alina, this has been incredibly valuable. Where can people follow your work and continue this conversation?
Well, you can find me on Instagram, Life Well Planning, and DM me from there. However, the best way of getting a hold of me is still the old-fashioned way, and that is by the telephone, 239-789-2533. You can go to my website, lifelawplanning.com. It has my phone number. It has a way to email me your inquiries. And we look forward to all calls, and we do our best to make sure that you know that you are the most important when we speak to you. It is about you and your family, and that's what a legacy is all about.
Alina, thank you for breaking down these often intimidating topics into steps that are not only manageable but empowering.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm very excited to be on your show.
Me too. Well, I just have to say that as estate planning attorneys, we always stick together. So if you need a resource, just know that even though we are only licensed in potentially one state, we have the ability to have resources to reach out to other people who can also help in your estate plan. So just know, viewers, you guys are not alone. So remember, estate planning isn't about documents, it's about peace of mind. Probate doesn't have to be a maze, and trusts aren't just for the wealthy. And most importantly, your legacy can be a gift that uplifts your family for generations to come. This has been In Plain Legal. I'm DNA High Easton. Until next time, stay informed, stay empowered, and take charge of your future.